We're back, and as a treat for the last session of the day here on the Wednesday of Azure Week, and thanks for sticking with us all day and all week, we have none other than Levi Broderick.
Hey.
Thank you, sir. And we talked about Katana, we talked about the futures, we had Scott Hunter, our bosses, talk about our plans for the future. So we're going to talk about some plans, some philosophies, some stuff, but also in a way that is code that they can play with.
Yes. Yeah, so what I'm going to be talking about today is what we're codenaming Project Helios. This isn't a final name, it's just a codename that we're using. And to start off with, let me introduce myself a little bit. My name is Levi Broderick. I'm a developer on the ASP.NET team. My focus is on the ASP.NET Core Runtime, so that would be system.web.dll and its friends, and also on web security. So, with that, I also want to draw your attention to this voucher that you all still have access to, so please keep this in mind, and let us start. So, today, what am I going to talk about? So, if you've been watching us the whole time, you've seen that Lou was actually the last person here, Lou DeJardin. And I'm going to very briefly summarize what he said, just in case you couldn't make his talk. And I also want to discuss, well, why does this matter? Why are we focusing on this right now going forward? Most of my time is actually going to be spent doing demonstrations. And beyond that, you know, after that, we'll just be wrapping up and pointing you to some resources so that you can take advantage of this on your own. All right, so let us talk about Katana for a few minutes. As Lou mentioned, there are four real layers to the Katana stack. There's, at the very bottom, the host layer, which is basically, which process does my application run in? Is it a console application? Is it a Windows service? Does it run inside of IIS? How is this application actually hosted? On top of that, there's the server layer. Maybe you're using raw sockets inside of your process. Maybe you're using HTTP listener. Maybe you're using system web. If you're hosted inside of IIS or IIS Express, like Lou showed, right now you're using system web inside of your application. On top of that is whatever framework you might be writing on. This would be an OWN-aware framework, such as Web API, SignalR, and so on. And on top of that would be the application, the code that you as the developer actually write. Now, the common thread between these four layers is OWN. And OWN, the Open Web Interface for .NET, is really best thought of as an interface or a set of APIs, a set of contracts that all of these different layers use to talk to each other. One of the nice things about that is, say that you had a SignalR application that was running inside of IIS, but you wanted to take that exact same application and make it work inside of a console application or inside of a Windows service. Without really having to do much to your application, you just change out this bottom layer, the layer that's highlighted green on the slide here, and with that, your application's now just running on this new host. So the two hosts that we've really been talking about lately are self-host, again, that would be console application or Windows service, and IIS. Let me talk about self-hosted scenarios first. So one of the reasons that you might want to use self-host inside of your application is maybe you already have an existing Windows service, maybe you didn't want to install IIS on your machine, maybe it was too heavyweight, but you have this existing service, and you want to expose a web interface to it. Maybe you want to allow administrators to log into this machine via a web API endpoint, and you want them to be able to control how the service is running on the machine. That would be an example of a scenario that could really take advantage of the self-host capabilities of web API. Now, there are a few downsides to this. For instance, if you're listening on port 80, your application needs special permissions on the machine to do that. Because remember, operating systems limit, they restrict, which applications can listen to ports under 1024. For self-host, for people who want really raw performance and that's really all they care about more than anything else in the world, you're not really going to be able to get much better than this, because once you remove all of the overhead and you're just, you know, bare to the wire, bare to the metal, like that's really it. You can't really improve on that much. So if you're writing a highly specialized application, this would be the type of host that would really probably be appropriate for you. Now, what about IIS? Well, IIS brings some interesting things to people, some things that application developers actually really take advantage of, whether or not they realize it under the covers. So application lifetime management is a big one of these. Say that you change something inside of your application, you update config, you change something in the bin folder, IIS automatically has behavior that detects those changes, tears down the application, and brings it back up, all without tearing down the process itself. For site visitors, what this means is that if the developer has made a change to the application, the site stays online. There's no hiccup in availability for the site. IIS also provides things like administrative capabilities. So if you're an IT manager and you have a bunch of servers, like 5 different machines all running an application, you can actually use the built-in administrative tools in Windows to manage all 5 of those applications spread across all 5 machines with, you know, a single PowerShell command. There are a few other things that are on this slide. I'm not necessarily going to talk to all of them right now just because you can look at the slide after the fact and I'll demo some of these too. But that said, what I really wanted to convey there was that IIS does have some capabilities. It does expose some things that people really do want to take advantage of over just a simple self-host scenario. Now, why Project Helios? Like, what are we doing right now? Why did we even do this in the first place?
And what have we done?
And what have we done? Yes, thank you. So let me move up to answer that question. Let me move up in the layer, one stack, and let me start talking about System Web. Now, System Web, as you know, is part of the .NET framework. It is something that, you know, we put out version 4.5, 2 years ago? We put out version 4.0 4 years ago, I think. But because it's part of the .NET framework, it's part of the operating system, it's something that if you want us to make a change, if there's a behavior that you don't like, a bug, or if you need us to add something, it's going to be a while before we can get that to you. And not only that, if you happen to be on a hoster, you need to convince your hoster to install a new version of the .NET framework on the machine, because that's the only way to get new versions of System Web. So, as an example, say that we have a bug in HTTP utility where we encode some character incorrectly. Well, again, you're going to have to wait. If you report that bug to us and you want to fix, you're going to have to wait for us to deploy a new version of the framework, and you're going to have to wait for your host to deploy that same version also. System Web is also a very prescriptive programming framework. So we have HTTP context, we have our own synchronization context, and these objects have, they have a weight to them, they have a prescriptive programming model to them, in the sense that if you don't like what HTTP context does and you're trying to build an application inside of ASP.NET, you really just have to tough it up and deal with the fact that that's how HTTP context behaves, and we can't really do much to change that. Because System Web is an everything and the kitchen sink programming model, that means that you're paying for things whether or not you actually use them. So in the case of an MVC application, your MVC application might not use web forms. Everything might be CSHTML oriented in the views. You're still paying for web forms to be in the pipeline just because, you know, System Web loads web forms whenever a request comes in. Another example that we keep getting tons and tons of feedback on is you have a web API application and you really, really want to return a 401 unauthorized to your user. Well, System Web's going to turn that into a 302 for you because surely you expected the end user to be redirected to the login page. Surely you didn't expect, you know, some smart application like a tablet or smartphone application to understand the 401 and then prompt the user for his credentials, you know, in the smart way going forward.
Now, I just want to make sure we're clear about one thing here. When we say System Web, I want to make sure that you're clear that Levi's pointing out System Web's programming model, which
yes.
is not WebForms programming model or
Correct.
MVC's program. We're talking about the core engine, the remaining piece of ASP.NET that's in the GAC.
Yes.
In the global assembly cache.
Yes. So, for example, when what was brought up earlier was that Web API, for instance, does not have a direct dependency on System Web. But if you host it inside of IIS Express, System Web is really the thing doing all of the heavy lifting in order to get the pipeline running so that Web API can process the requests. Now, what does all of this mean going forward? So the slide here, the state of the art of web development is accelerating. What we mean by that is frameworks are coming up all the time. Patterns and practices new patterns and practices are being created all the time. How can we react to those if what we have is this monolithic system web inside the framework? A great example of that is consider something like Socket.io, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or SignalR. You have applications that have these very long-running connections. These connections might be open for, you know, minutes, hours, potentially days at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But system web is still at its heart a request-response programming model. How do we shoehorn a long-running connection into something that is at its heart of hearts, you know, this model that was never intended to do that? Additionally, if we do manage to somehow get this into system web, how on earth can we get it into your hands if you're at the mercy of your hoster to, you know, deploy 4.5 or deploy 4.5.1 or 4.6 or 5.0 or whatever going forward before you can actually take advantage of it inside of your own applications? So let's just rethink this from the ground up. What if you could actually host your application inside of IIS, inside of a typical web process, but you weren't dependent on system web and all of the behaviors that it brings to the table? So what if we could simplify this and remove what people have told us time and time again are problems with running on top of the system? With that, we have Project Helios. And what this is intended to do is think of this as almost equivalent to self-host, but inside of IIS. The behaviors that you're going to get are self-host-like behaviors. For instance, no converting 401s to 302s. There's no synchronization context that could potentially cause deadlocks inside of your application. Instead, the code that you write is basically the code that runs with minimal interference by the layer underneath you.
Would another way to phrase it is that there was a lot of valuable magic 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but now in the modern web world, that magic is just in our way, but not just in our way, but completely unable to be removed out of our way.
That is actually a really good way to think about it. The example that we brought up earlier is there is some web form specific logic that runs for every single request, even if you don't use web forms inside of your application. Why have that logic interfere? Why have that logic take up valuable memory?
Well, and to the idea that I've been saying all day as you've been watching is this idea of the black box. The internet itself isn't a black box. I mean, how many times have you gotten a question from someone about, well, I don't know, I clicked here and then it's, look at the headers.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the redirect. Well, there you go. The internet was not hiding it from you. You just need to hit F12 or use Fiddler or, you know, get on Wireshark.
Right.
This is an example of we want to make it so ASP.NET is modular, clean, simple, where there's no surprises.
Yes.
If something gets redirected, it's either your fault or there's a piece of middleware that did it.
Now, to be fair, a lot of these behaviors right now are implemented in IHTTP modules that can be controlled via web config.
That is true.
But a lot of this magic is turned on by default, and some of them are actually required just for any ASP.NET request to even work at all.
Hmm.
The synchronization context, which some people have told us this is causing deadlocks inside of my application, because, you know, I'm using async await in a manner that ASP.NET doesn't expect me to. Well, that's something that's intrinsic to system web that you can't remove just by removing a module from the framework. So that's an example of system web being in your way where you just want it to be out of your way.
Kind of a big bunch of negativity to start out our presentation here.
Yeah. Well, I'm not trying to be too hard on system web. I'm just trying to present the facts, right? It's a great framework. It does what people want it to do for the most part. But if it does something you don't want it to do, you're going to be in a really, really bad way.
Yeah. Okay.
So one of the things that Helios brings to the table, Project Helios, is we're trying to expose the underlying IIS capabilities for free. So you get things like WebSockets, you get things like Windows Authentication, because those are provided under the covers by IIS. They're not provided by ASP.NET. This means that if you have a Helios-compatible application, you can still use these capabilities. One of the really nice things about this system is we can actually completely bin deploy the Project Helios framework. There's nothing that requires your hoster to install something on their servers. There's nothing that requires you to go looking for a hoster that supports this framework. If it runs subject to the requirements that I'm going to set out later in the presentation, if it runs on your machine and your machine meets those requirements, it'll also run on any other hoster as long as the hoster meets those same requirements.
I want to see what it is.
You want to see what it is.
Ah.
Ah, demos, imagine that. So let's actually just go create an application. You know, enough talking, let's actually see this in action.
Yay.
So I am going to create a typical Hello World Katana application.
We've never done one of those today.
We've never done one of those,
no.
No. This web application is Web Application 27, because why not, right? So, as Lou showed, whenever you're writing an own application that you expect to be hosted inside of SystemWeb, the package that you pull in is Microsoft Own Host System. It turns out there's no autocomplete. The package you pull in is Microsoft Own Host System Web. So let me just, I signed my life away.
Yep.
And the convention is that there is a class called Startup. There is a method called configuration, and it takes an IAP builder as a parameter. And you know what? Since this is Hello World, we're just going to do it this way, right?
All right, as we did before.
So context response status code equals 200. Content type, not content length, content type is text plain. And I'm just going to write, hey there.
Okay.
Now, again, this is an own application running inside of IIS. Nothing terribly interesting going on there. Like, it's outputting hey there just as we would expect, right?
Wow.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, it's a touch screen.
It is a touch screen.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that earlier today.
Da-da-da.
Spiffy. Now, let me show you something just to make what I mentioned earlier about SystemWeb being in the pipeline a little bit more explicit. I'm going to set a breakpoint on this line and hit F5. So this is going to take a long time, so I'm going to,
Getting
a long
symbols,
time.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Go back into Visual Studio.
Okay, you're broken.
I'm broken. So my application isn't actually touching SystemWeb anywhere. There's no reason for SystemWeb to be in the pipeline.
But yeah, look at all that stuff
but
in
look
your
at
call
this.
Stack.
Wow.
It's a lot of work.
Like, I have native code calling into SystemWeb, which is calling back into native code, calling back into SystemWeb. Wow, look at all those methods. That's a lot of stuff there.
And it's interesting. If you've ever seen any of my videos on ASP.NET MVC, I show people that call stack, and people should spend time on the call stack and looking at that, because it tells you a lot about what's going on. Now, look what he's done here.
Look at this.
He said, get assemblies. What's running in the current app domain? 37 assemblies.
37, that's quite a sizable number, right?
So well, and all you did was say, hey there.
Yeah, and all I did was say, hey there. And look at that. It's pulling in, like, look at that. It's
workflow
pulling in
services.
Workflow. WCF's in here, too, I'm sure.
You could go and delete some of those references.
You could, but... You know, there some of them are going to be there whether or not you want them, just because SystemWeb brings them in.
Okay,
let me stop that. So when I say Project Helios, this is in particular what I'm referring to. We have a package up, and I'll explain where to get this later, Microsoft Own Host IIS.
Ah, so instead of Microsoft Own Host SystemWeb.
Yes. So so if you look at my references here, the thing that made Own work inside of SystemWeb was this reference, Microsoft Own Host SystemWeb, right? This is what Lou talked about also in his last presentation. Let me just go ahead and add a reference to the Helios host, Microsoft Own Host IIS.
Okay.
Yep. Rebuild.
You need to remove the other one, or?
I don't have to remove the other one. It turns out the Helios host is actually smart enough to detect the system web host and say, I'm going to take over. You're not going to have access to this.
You can't sit
here. It's just a convenience that we did.
Okay.
So I have, I have rebuilt this. Again, hey there, exactly what you would have expected, right? Nothing too interesting. Hit F5. I don't want to load symbols. Okay. Now let's take a look at the call stack.
Well, it's actually, you don't even need to scroll. You can just make that taller and we'll be able to see it all.
Yeah, take a look at that. There's no system web anywhere in the call stack.
It says app domain transition. I assume that's between IIS and us.
Yes, that is correct, because IIS is still at its core a native process, so it still needs to do a reverse p-invoke into...
Sure, we don't get near our microphones.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Thank you, Scott.
We just need to make sure we don't touch our mics.
Yes. But I don't, you know, this mic is actually so comfortable, I just...
Yeah, just don't touch it.
Don't. Okay, fine. Thank you. So anyway, so IIS being a native process, when it gets a request, it enters native code, and then it does a reverse p-invoke to get back into the managed world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what all of this stuff is here, if you look in the call stack. It's the reverse p-invoke, and then it's the Helios layer, not the system web layer,
Okay. Setting
up the Owen interfaces that it's going to pass into you, and then your callback runs, right?
Mm-hmm.
This line runs, this line runs, this line runs. Now, you saw me earlier call appdomain current domain get assemblies. Let me call it again. How many assemblies do we have loaded?
From 37 17. To 17. And arguably, you could still yank out XML and a couple of other ones.
Oh, right. I shouldn't be touching that.
Sorry.
Look, where's system web?
You just lost 20 of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait a second. You're hosting an ASP.NET application, an Owen application.
An Owen application.
In IIS.
Yes.
Securely and nicely. And there's nothing. There's no system.web involved at all.
Yeah. Like WIF's not loaded, workflow's not loaded, WCF's not loaded, things that system web normally brings in.
And this gets to the point of the cafeteria plan, this compartmentalization of the features. If you don't need that feature, it shouldn't be loaded.
Yes. So this is, the promise of Katana, basically. You bring in only what you need, you pay for only what you need.
Mm.
So if I were to set my status code to be 401, you would actually see a 401, not a 302. There's nothing in the middle that's rewriting that for you. So this is a very much, you write what you mean, you write what goes out on the wire kind of framework. Again, very similar to self-host. The best way to think of this is self-host on IIS, for lack of a better term.
And you've got less going on in the call stack, and you've got 20 fewer assemblies in there. I'm presuming that memory is less?
Yes, memory is less. Let me actually show that real fast. I do have another application here. Of course, this one I'm actually deploying to IIS, so I need to run VS as an admin.
Okay.
So this is a typical Hello World application. All this is doing is, again, writing out Hello World, but it's doing it in what I take to be the most optimized way possible.
That's pretty obnoxious.
That's pretty obnoxious, but you'll see exactly why I did this.
All right.
So let me publish this to IIS. Again, this is using the system web host for Owen. Let me make sure that works. Yep, I'm getting a 200 back. So I'm just gonna start WCAT, which is the tool that we use. It's also available on IIS.net. A tool that we use just for doing basic performance testing of applications.
And was that involved with, I know that you did that. You did that actually from Fiddler, it looked like.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that from Fiddler.
It turns out there's
actually an extension. If you do a Bing or a Google search for Fiddler WCAT, it'll return back the extension you can install into Fiddler to
do this.
That's
great. Nice.
But let me show you something here. These are live numbers on this machine. Okay. So what I want to call special attention to is allocated bytes per second and requests per second.
300 million?
Yeah, so hitting this website at 14,000 requests a second is causing the system web framework to allocate 300 million bytes per second of memory. Now, for requests per second, I want to stress this is not an actual performance test, because I'm doing the test on the machine that's being hit. I'm running perfmon from the machine that's being hit. I'm TS'd into the machine that's being hit. I have Visual Studio and Fiddler.
Zoomed into the machine.
I've zoomed in, yeah. Like there's a lot of stuff going on, but at least the relative numbers should be okay, even if the absolute ones aren't. So let me just write this down real fast. What is that? 300,014,300?
Requests per second.
Requests per second. So
is this a fancy machine? Are we terminaled into like the greatest machine ever, or is this
This is actually my development machine. So it has like a decent amount of memory, decent CPU.
Okay.
But so what do we have? 300 million. 300 million bytes per second.
Okay.
Over 300 million bytes per second. Over, I had to switch modes. Hmm. Over 14,300 requests per second. Is around 21 kilobytes of memory per request.
Because right? I realized that 300 million is a scary number.
Yeah.
But we're putting into the context here, it's 21K per request.
So let's round that to 20K per request, right?
Well, I mean, it's damn near 21K.
But Say that you wanted to see how many how many concurrent connections you could get on a machine with 8 gigabytes of memory, right?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right.
20,000 bytes per request,
right,
at 8 gigabytes on the machine,
right,
is, I completely forgot how to do math. I think that's 50, what is it? That's, you know what? I'm no longer in college, okay?
I'm not going to do it for you because that would just make you look bad.
Yeah. 400,000 requests concurrent.
That's exactly the number I came up with.
Yeah, exactly the number I came up with too, right? But anyway, so an interesting thing about this is I'm just considering managed memory, right? I'm not considering native memory. Because of the overhead of what Windows has for each request and what HTTP.sys has and what IIS has, the actual number might be closer to maybe 100,000 instead of 400,000. Now, the reason this matters is that how did people traditionally do scale-out with ASP.NET? Well, traditionally, the way to do it is you simply add machines to your farm. If machine A can get, 30,000 concurrent connections, then simply add machines B, C, and D, and now you have a 120,000, right? 30,000 times 4.
Right.
What we're seeing, though, are that as people are moving to very long-running requests, people are moving to a situation where they want to scale out on a single machine rather than on multiple machines in a farm, the amount of memory that each connection takes up on a single machine is actually quite an important factor, right? This is just the way that application development is moving going forward.
Right, we can't just blindly try to come up with, like, how many connections can we handle?
Yeah.
You're going to hit memory contention very, very quickly.
You are, yeah. And, I mean, you have virtual memory inside the OS to help with this a little bit, but when you start taking into consideration things like memory having to be paged back into physical memory from the swap file, mm-hmm. you're going to start getting, I/O contention on the disk. You're going to start getting cache misses. You're going to start getting context switches. It's going to add up over time.
Right.
So for this perf application, let me pull in the Helios package again. So this is going from system web host for Owen to the project Helios host for Owen. I'm going to IIS reset just to make sure I haven't polluted the metrics with the previous run. Publish this. Yep, everything looks like it worked. Hit the site again just to make sure. Yep, gave me a 200. Okay, let me run this. And go back over to perfmon and see what numbers it gives me.
Oh, yeah, let's let it go for a second. Let it get warm.
Let it get warm. Yep.
It's pretty warm.
That is pretty warm. Actually, this number is actually a tiny bit lower than when I ran it earlier today.
Oh, yeah?
But given that, okay.
Yep.
Pick
a big one and pause it.
Yeah, let's just say it's finished here, right? So for 37,000 requests a second at one... Wow, this is really slow here. At 100 million bytes per second... over 30,000 requests per second.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can do better math there. That's going to come out to about 3K per connection rather than about 20K per connection, right?
Right.
So if you're considering how many concurrent connections can you get on a single machine, that's certainly going to up the number when you compare it with a regular system web-based application. Now, all of that said, this is going to be heavily dependent on what you as a developer actually do inside of your application, what middlewares you bring in. I mean, it's all well and good that I can serve Hello World at 40,000 requests a second on this particular machine, but if you can monetize a website serving Hello World at 40,000 requests a second, more power to you. Like, no application is ever going to do that in practice.
GeoCities.
Sure. Huh.
GeoCities.
GeoCities, yeah.
But your point is well taken. I mean, there are lots and lots of basic sites that don't need a lot of memory. I've got 16 sites running on Azure in a small VM. This is not a VM with any power at all. I certainly don't want these small sites to take up a couple hundred megs of RAM for no reason, especially if they're getting pushed on each other. So that's pretty powerful stuff.
Yep. As another example here, I have the SignalR stock ticker sample. This is just, pulled straight from their GitHub repository. Nothing terribly special that I've changed. I believe this is currently using... Yes, this is currently using the system web host for Owen, correct?
Right.
Control F5 just to make sure everything works. Actually, I need to view this particular page. Sorry.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. Open the market. This is using, you know, SignalR under the cover, so you get this nice fallback. It uses WebSockets or long polling or server sent events based on the capability of both the client and the server. So you can see that this is working, you know, system web, oh, and nothing, again, nothing magical going on. Let me pull in the Helios host once more. Again, all I'm doing to pull in the Helios host is getting this one package, microsoft.owen.host.ias, from NuGet. I'm accepting the license because that's what I do. I sign my life
and
away.
Where does it plug in? How does it know to use it?
So what was that?
How does it know to use it? You said that you didn't have to remove the system web, and it just magically worked. But we've been spending the whole day not doing magical things.
So the way that it works magically is magic. It drops in your bin folder this special file, aspnet.loader.dll. We have added logic to system.web, to ASP.NET 4.5.1, that looks for this particular assembly in the bin folder. And if it sees this assembly, instead of going through the regular system web application hosting routines, it simply transfers control of the application over to this assembly. And it says, hey, you're hosted inside of IIS. Here's everything that IIS gave system.web. You take over from here. And Project Helios is basically, at this point, just interacting directly with IIS, bypassing all of system web and saying, yep, I know how to read a request body, I know how to write a response body, I know how to read headers.
So that's a Helios entry point?
That's the Helios entry point. Helios is a few more DLLs in the bin folder, but this is the entry point.
So you added this in 4.5.1.
Yes.
It's sitting there now.
Yes, 4.5.1, which, by the way, we pushed out over Windows Update last month, has this capability in it. Now, it's up to you to provide this ASP.NET.loader.dll assembly, but we make one available on NuGet, and I can show how to pull that in.
Is that the one we just pulled in?
That is the one we just pulled in.
Okay.
So I have rebuilt the stock ticker application. All I've done is I've pulled in the special loader assembly via our NuGet package. And let me go back to the HTML file view. Open market. So you can see that the SignalR application is okay. The SignalR application is working. The market is open. Because this is SignalR, you know, it works in both IE and Chrome. Right? I'm seeing the same thing in both browsers. This is just SignalR under the covers. This is what SignalR does.
It works exactly as before.
Let me pull up F12 just for fun and show you something. Take a look at this right here. This is actually using WebSockets. So because IIS as a host supports WebSockets, the Helios NuGet package can simply push that up to layers above it and say, hey, my host knows how to speak this protocol, knows how to speak the WebSocket protocol. I can push that up so that another layer, such as SignalR, can take advantage of it. So this means that all of the services that you were relying on that system.web host for Owen gave you, many of those services are still available inside of this new package.
If I'm self-hosting this SignalR stock sample in an executable, do I get WebSockets?
You do, and the reason that you get WebSockets is that the HTTP listener host does actually understand how HTTP listener exposes WebSockets, and it turns that into an Owen-compliant interface that SignalR can then consume.
Wow. So SignalR is just winning no matter what it does.
And that's part of the promise of Owen, too, right? As long as all of the hosts can have radically different implementations, but as long as the contract is the same, any framework, web API, SignalR, you name it, can sit on top of it and can speak the language, can take advantage of those features. So that's, you know, SignalR stock ticker. And just one more demo, just so you know that, you know, I'm not lying to you.
This is a big project.
This is a big project. This is Jabber, right?
You can see Jabber live. It's jabber.net.
Yep.
It runs on Azure. If you watch Azure Friday, you go to friday.azure.com. We're hosted on Jabber. This is a big, non-trivial application. This is not a stock ticker.
Correct. And this is right now hosted on the System Web Host for Owen. Again, all I've done is I've cloned this from the repository on GitHub. The only change I have made is to the connection string inside of webconfig, because I needed to talk to, you know, my actual real database, not some sample one. So I can, I've already created an account. I can log in.
This is an MVC application?
This is, I don't believe it's MVC. I think it has a little bit of NANSI. I think it has some web API. It pulls in a lot of
things. SignalR, web API.
Yeah.
NANSIFX, which is a third party.
Yep, it's pulling in quite a bit of stuff.
But a bunch of Owen compatible frameworks.
Yep, a bunch of Owen compatible frameworks. Jabber is Owen all the way down. Now, what I'm going to do is, again, I'm just going to pull in this package, Microsoft Owen Host IIS. I am making.
Before you shut it down.
Yeah.
Did it already bring it in?
I've already brought it in.
I wanted to see that. This is a non-trivial size.
This is a non-trivial app.
I want to see how many modules are loaded in memory. Before and after. Can we?
We could totally do that. Let me yank that back out. Installed.
Because he's got piles of stuff in there. That's why this is such a good example.
Microsoft Owen Host IIS. Uninstall.
Cool. Thanks for doing this.
To be fair, I don't think this particular host is going to radically reduce the number of modules loaded into memory, because once you get an application of any sufficient size, the application tends to dominate, not the host.
But I think it's an interesting thing, and then memory size and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. So that's built.
Okay.
Let me just make sure the application still works.
Boom, there you go.
Oh, it detected that Jabber updated.
That's pretty good. It's a great application.
So, attached to process, IIS Express, why not? Debug, Windows, don't care. Debug, Windows, modules, and then,
There's a lot.
This is a lot.
What did you
do? Oh, here we go, order.
Oh, there you go.
So
almost 100.
98 modules. But again, keep in mind that
it's not about module. I'm not understanding that. Right. It's not about module removal. It's about improvement. It's about measurable improvement in memory footprint, in throughput, in all things. You're not going to point to, oh, look, now it's got less.
Yeah.
It's getting cruft out of the way.
So it is getting cruft out of the way. Now, 98, again, is a very large number, but it's due to the fact that Jabber is a non-trivial application. There is a little bit of duplication.
98's reality.
98's reality, yeah. But, some of these are GACT, some of these are NGen, for instance. So we're
getting anonymous generated.
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of duplication in there, but sure, 98, right? Why not? This is what happens when you make me go off script.
There's a script?
I do have a script.
I'm just teasing. I never have a script.
I'm a hack.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you. So, rebuild. Is this actually going to tell me that an update took place? After a while, yeah. So, I have pulled in the Helios package. Okay. I'm going back to home. Oh, look, I'm still signed in fact. The application's working.
Still runs. Looks great.
Still runs.
Yeah.
Yep. Attach a debugger and take a look at the loaded modules. I don't actually think it's going to be considerably less. 93.
Okay. So five, but seriously though.
Yeah.
Five DLLs that didn't need to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The call stack is unquestionably smaller.
Yes, it actually is. I don't quite know where in this to break to show you that, though, unfortunately.
Well, there's a half dozen places you could break. Any one of this could show you whether it's deep or not. Mm-hmm. But you're getting four or five DLLs out of memory that don't need to be there.
Yeah.
You are improving the per-request memory size.
Yep.
So there's just memory being allocated all the time, and we can't really do anything about it.
Yeah, so in the case of Jabber in particular, the Jabber application does actually have a system web dependency. They use it, I believe, for calling into its encoding routines. So system web is in the process. Yeah, I know, right?
That's funny.
System web is in the process, but it's not actually involved with request processing. So if we were to do that exact same memory test, you'd actually see that on the Helios layer, considerably less memory is being used now than was used previously.
Because they're probably just using the utility encoding functions.
They are. They're basically just using HTTP
just
utility.
Some static functions.
Yep. And that's the only part of system web that ever really gets loaded into the process, so that's really the only part they ever pay for, just the encoding routines. They're not paying for web forms. They're not paying for any other HTTP handler or module in that assembly. They're just paying the cost of HTTP utility because it's all they happen to be using.
So what does this mean about the next couple of years of ASP.NET? I mean, I think that we're seeing ASP.NET get out of the GAC, but not just the GAC. This isn't about the global assembly cache as much as getting out of the monolithic framework business.
Yes. So you actually see, even going back to, you know, MVC1 back in, what was that, 2008, you saw us say, hey, it would be really interesting for us to make a completely out-of-band framework, something that you don't need your host to go GAC for you. You can just, you know, bin deploy it, and your application runs on your hoster exactly as it did on your machine.
Yep.
I think this is an interesting model to move to. We've seen SignalR do this, you know, Web API, MVC I already mentioned, and this allows us to make changes more quickly with a higher cadence, but this also means that from a serviceability standpoint, we're less likely to break you if we ever do have to change anything.
And it's put more onus on the user,
yes,
to be smart about what they pick, mm-hmm, what they bring in, and also when a security update does happen, they're going to need to deal with it, which,
yes,
is frankly how everyone else in the world that doesn't have a Windows update does their things.
Yes.
Node, PHP, Rails, they all have to deal with these things by watching the modules that they bring in and thinking about those things.
Now, to be fair, even these out-of-band assemblies can be serviced if there is an absolute end-of-the-world security incident.
Mm.
But we hope never, ever, ever to have to use that.
Yeah.
But just in case, the option is available. And if you go to MSDN blogs, I believe the CLR team has a blog entry detailing how that works.
Okay.
Now, that said, you saw me going up against NuGet.org to pull down these packages. This is the package name if you do want to play with this, microsoft.owen.host.ias. That's, you know, this is a pre-release, keep in mind. We don't support this. Let me skip slides here. This is a pre-release. We don't support this. It's simply an experiment. It's something that we're thinking of maybe making a supported product going forward, but we really need to, you know, get the community to tell us that this is something they really see value in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do end up using it, I mean, please give us feedback on it. Remember, don't deploy it in production. This has not been, you know, properly stress tested. It hasn't been properly security tested. It is just a pre-release. System requirements. I know I'm going backward in the slide here. The only thing that this requires as far as the .NET framework goes is .NET 4.5.1, which again, we pushed out over Windows Update, I believe, right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. So most developer machines should already have that on it. To run to run Helios, you do require IIS 8 or IIS Express 8 and Windows 8. We're trying to find ways so that this works also on perhaps Windows Vista or Windows 7 or the equivalent server SKUs. But at the moment, right now, this just requires Windows 8 or Windows Server 2012.
For actual technical reasons.
For actual technical reasons. Because the reason is that we're p-invoking. A lot of this is interacting directly with IIS, and the APIs that Helios requires happen to exist only on Windows 8. But we can, if there's demand, figure out alternative APIs that work on previous OSs.
Cool.
Remember, don't deploy it in production. But do experiment with us. Do experiment with it, you know, give us feedback. And with that, you know, this is my email address and Twitter handle. If you do have any other questions, you know, please don't hesitate to contact me or anyone else on the team. And I believe I'll pass it back to you, Scott.
That's fantastic. Cool. Well, we're learning a whole bunch of great new stuff here about how applications are going to be built in the future. We saw from Scott Hunter and some of his ideas about how he wants to break pieces up of ASP.NET. He wants to include a lot of choice. It's all about choice. We want you to be able to pick the frameworks you want to use that make you happy, and they're all part of one ASP.NET. We learned about Owen. We saw that being able to use SignalR and Web API and MVC, and you can self-host your Web APIs today. We learned about that great stuff. Remember that tomorrow is IaaS Day, so stick with us for the rest of Azure Week, and all of this will be recorded online and available to you. We'll be up at 9 a.m. Pacific tomorrow, so be sure to get up early with us or stay up late, Australians, and hang out with us all week on Azure Week. Thank you very, very much. I'm going to go take a nap.
Well deserved.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Yes,
thanks. Have a great day.
Take care.